Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:39 Pacific Standard Time. Well, today is Friday and it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, this week has been particularly eventful. In the bond markets in particular, there's a lot to report. Well, when you go and look at what the ECB is actually doing, they're increasing the size of their balance sheet by 50%. Well, if that was a small bank, you wouldn't really pay much attention. But when it's the ECB and they're talking about 1.1 trillion euros, and at today's exchange rate, that's, well, I guess a quickly shrinking euro, but it's still a substantial amount of money. Well, you have to put that in context. You look at what the Fed has been doing over the last 6 months, and they've ended their quantitative easing program. Their purchases on a monthly basis had been about approximately $40 billion, equally split between government bonds and mortgages. Well, that was what helped to sustain what had been an incredibly consistent advance on Wall Street over the last 2 years. The Fed has ended its program. Well, when you think then that this has been a liquidity-fueled environment and that liquidity is globally fungible, in other words, that a central bank creating money in one place can, that money won't necessarily stay within its economy, but that it'll go to where you have the most attractive assets or the highest yields or the best potential for appreciation or currency appreciation. So capital is globally fungible. The Fed's largesse over the last number of years has really helped the ECB to withdraw its own liquidity because there were open swap lines available with the Fed, and European banks have got, had ample opportunity to source funding from the ECB, which in turn was getting it from the Fed. With the end of the Fed's program, that put pressure on the ECB to take responsibility for its own monetary policy. And they've stepped up. It's incredibly bullish news. Well, when you look at a number of those European equity markets, they've been largely range-bound for, well, much of the last year to 15 months, but they're breaking out today. Well, we don't really have a great deal of evidence that quantitative easing it does very much to promote economic growth. It certainly helps to deter the possibility that you're going to have a deflationary crunch, but what it's very successful in doing is inflating asset prices. Well, we've got ample examples of that in the US, where housing prices have recovered and where you have the stock market has recovered. Well, Europe has been really in need of some form of stimulus, and it's now getting it. So when you look at some of those European indices and you compare them, for example, with the S&P 500, well, the S&P had broken out last year and it's currently trading at approximately 2050 points. Europe, on the other hand, has only retraced approximately 50% of the decline that it had in 2008. Well, just to get back up to the upper side of that long range on the euro stocks would represent a significant advance. And it's not beyond the bounds possibility that with the ECB rolling out a stimulus package of in the region of 60 billion euros a month. So in euros, you redenominate that into US dollars and you put a 15% premium on top, but it's significantly larger than the purchases that the Fed was making, and it's going to be going into government bonds. Well, then go look at some of those government bond yield charts in the chart library. This has been really quite a large move that you're seeing. The Bund market was stronger by an additional full point in here today. Well, in price terms, that's 158.75. Well, considering that those bonds are going to mature at par, that's pricing in really quite a deflationary outcome. But of course, now that you have the momentum base from the central bank behind it, well, there isn't really an upward limit to how high those prices can go. Well, we've seen that Sovereign bonds at the short end of the curve, up to 2 years, have been trading in negative territory for much of the last 3 or 4 months. And, well, where you see German bunds at the moment is at approximately 40 basis points over zero. When we look at where those Eurozone spreads traded at before the financial crisis, countries like France and Italy and Spain were trading at give or take about 10 basis points over bunds. France is currently trading around 60.6 of 1%. I think it's about 60 basis points over bunds, and the Spain and Italy at approximately 100 basis points over bunds. Well, if the ECB is going to be purchasing 60 billion euros every month for the next 18 months, well, that's a sizable chunk of change. That's going to send sovereign yields lower. It's going to create incredibly attractive opportunities for Eurozone sovereigns to refinance. Some of that money is going to get pushed into the banking sector. Well, there's never really been a better time to issue bonds. That there is going to be a very large market for those bonds with the ECB being so active. Well, when we look around the world and look at where the liquidity situation is, that 2014 was a pretty quiet year. That the Bank of Japan had announced its stimulus package, but, well, the Bank of Japan is the third largest, well, you might say even the fourth largest central bank behind China. Well, China lowered interest rates in December, but that it has been on a tightening bias for the last 3 years, that Europe had been unwinding its LTRO program, and the Fed had been unwinding its own quantitative easing program. Well, you couldn't have a more different scenario right now, where Japan is still pumping, where the Eurozone has just turned the taps on, where China, having cut interest rates in the latter part of last year, is potentially going to have its own stimulus program at some point this year. Well, it means that if you look at the cumulative number of dollars in existence, or the amount of money that central banks are holding on their various balance sheets, is at approximately $14.5 trillion. And, well, if you start adding it up, that could quite easily get up to about $17 trillion in the next 18 months. Well, that's an incredible amount of money to throw at the global economy. It really does mean that the liquidity-fueled environment that has prevailed over the last 5 years is still intact. Well, since most of that money is getting thrown at Europe, the euro has weakened significantly over the last 2 days. It's down to 1.12 and change, down an extra cent and a half in here today. Well, you look at the relative strength of the US economy and the strength of the dollar against a whole basket of currencies, and not just the euro, is pretty evident that the US dollar index is breaking up out of what has been a 4 to 5 year base that is coming off incredibly high levels. Well, it is overbought in the short term. The euro is getting increasingly oversold in the short term, but neither is there any evidence just yet that this has ended. Well, the Australian dollar was weaker today by an additional full cent of 1.2 cents. The Canadian dollar has been falling. It's up now to $1.25. So that's a pretty marked deterioration in commodity currencies. It's certainly not limited to commodity currencies. That what we're really faced with at the present is that there is competitive devaluation. That the US dollar has been so very, very weak for such a long time that, well, it gave ample opportunity to, because commodity prices were high and because growth trajectories were so impressive just about everywhere else, that when one country allows its currency to appreciate, well, it gives a little bit of extra room to everyone else to allow theirs as well. There was concerted appreciation relative to the US dollar and against the euro, but particularly in commodity and emerging market currencies, and a lot of that is now being unwound. Well, with the Bank of Japan then adopting this well, concerted effort to weaken the yen that was the catalyst for this competitive devaluation in currencies. Well, the Eurozone needs a weak currency. They have this deflationary outlook. Certainly the weaker oil price is going to help, but well, what they need is economic growth, and well, not only do they need the competitiveness of the periphery to improve relative to the core, but just on average they need competitiveness relative to the rest of the world to improve. Well, the weaker currency is certainly going to help in that that secondary objective. Well, bunds are incredibly low. They could go lower. The borrowing costs that you're going to see in Europe are going to be very, very low. Well, if you start then applying the playbook from the US to Europe, then the ability of corporates to refinance at incredibly low levels is going to be much improved. The potential for share buybacks will also improve, although you don't have the same sort of corporate culture in much of Europe that you do in the US. But certainly the incentive to refinance, to retire more expensive debt, will be even more attractive in Europe than it has been. Well, that's really just a very powerful catalyst, and it's an under-owned sector. But of course, from the perspective of anybody that's outside the Eurozone, well, then you have to look at it from the same perspective as you would with Japan, that there is really quite significant currency market risk, and that one would have to adopt some form of hedge if one is participating in some of these European equities. Well, when we look at the oil price, well, this week was really very eventful as well, in that you had King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia passing away yesterday. Well, generally what we've seen with Saudi Arabia is that the family tends to rally around, and you see that responsibility for various tasks gets taken over as the sovereign becomes increasingly frail. So there is a clear line of succession, and that holding on to Al-Naimi as the head or in charge of the oil ministry signals to the market that the policy that's been adopted over the last 6 months is to be sustained. Well, following a very brief rally yesterday, WTI is down 91 cents in here today. It's pretty close to a new low. It's at 45.40. Well, we just don't have any evidence yet that the decline in crude oil prices has ended. Since the end of June, oil hasn't been able to sustain a rally of more than $5 on any time that it is as steadied up. Well, it's one of the more consistent trends in the world at present. Consistent trends are trends in motion that, as long as you have these very small ranges one below another, then you'd have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. There's no evidence yet that oil prices have found support. Well, obviously, when you look at something that has pulled back by more than 50% and in such a rapid fashion, well, people start to think about when is going to be the time to start getting involved again. Well, I suppose what you would consider a select number of energy related shares that have not moved to new lows, that they bounced in late December, that they retested those lows in the last week, but their ability to sustain a rally in what is still a declining oil price environment is pretty questionable. That you're going to have to see some evidence in the form of a bullish catalyst from the oil price in order to become bullish on, or at least to reduce the risk of buying today in some of those energy related investments. Well, when we do eventually see the short covering rally in oil, well, we're going to see a meaningful high beta reaction in some of those energy investments. So, this really is the time to begin to watch it and watch closely. Elsewhere in the commodity sector, copper, having broken down in October and having a reasonably impressive rally over the last 10 sessions, well, it fell by an extra 8 cents in here today. It's coming back to test the low. Well, if that low is going to hold, it's going to have to rally and rally in an important way. And, well,
following today's downward dynamic, that may not be on the cards. That with oil prices still very low, that the potential for feed through into the industrial complex is pretty high, considering that energy is such an incredibly high cost base in terms of the mining sector, and that lower energy prices ensure the sustainability of pretty marginal mining operations, and therefore the excess supply situation that we continue to have. Well, the gold sector is also important. Well, gold prices were a little bit weaker in here today, but that's following consecutive days where they were pretty firm. That we now have a failed downside break below $1,200. Well, from the chart seminar, veteran subscribers and anyone who's been to the chart seminar will know that when you have this evidence of a failed downside break, that the chances are that you're going to see prices get back up and test the upper side of the range. Well, the upper side of the range for gold is between $350 and $1,400, and it's currently around $1,294. So when you think about all of the challenges that there are out there, the fact that there's just going to be no supply of liquidity, well, that means that gold isn't going to have a great deal of competition from interest rates in terms of its value. Well, from the perspective of a gold miner, well, gold isn't in abundant supply. That most of the selling that we've had has come from ETFs, and the bulk of that selling happened more than 2 years ago. That the gold mining sector should be doing reasonably well, that gold prices have at least steadied, that the cost of mining is being reduced because of the lower energy price, and therefore profitability should be improving. And we are seeing that if one clicks through the constituents of the gold bugs or looks at any of the gold mines that are paying a dividend in particular, that we are seeing the return of bullish interest. And that's important because gold shares are back to the position they were in relative to the gold price that they were in 2000. In other words, they've unwound their entire bull market relative to the gold price, and there's evidence that they're finding support on a relative basis, that gold shares might now start to offer the type of leverage relative to the gold price that investors want to see to justify actually owning them relative to an ETF. That's a potentially important development. Well, when we think about the stock markets, that most people are now thinking about it in terms of valuations, they're looking at in terms of liquidity, they're really looking at it in terms of that where we had a large degree of commonality in terms of performance in 2012 and 2013, that it was more of a stock picker's market in 2014. And, well, I guess you could consider that that is more of a normal environment for stock markets generally. Well, what we're seeing is that despite the fact that you have Ebola is still a problem in West Africa, and that you have civil war in Iraq and Syria and in Yemen, or at least developing in Yemen, that you have this deflationary pressure in Europe. Well, those are isolated incidents, whereas elsewhere you have a democratic government with a majority for the first time, with an absolute majority for the first time in decades in India, that the Chinese stock market is returning to a position of outperformance following what was really 3 years of massive underperformance, that the rise of the middle class is still very much intact, that economic growth is centered in the world's major population centers. Well, that's creating demand for just about everything, and well, the abundant liquidity environment that is resuming at present is potentially very bullish for the types of companies that will benefit from the rise of the global consumer. Well, if you think about it, that over the last 3 or 4 years, that those types of companies have really relied on the growth in the emerging markets, and that the consumer in North America and in Europe has been under really quite a lot of pressure. Well, we might be seeing a bit of a reversal of that type of trend. It really does speak to the benefit of the kind of companies that have got truly global operations, that one can substitute the other and that they are generally less volatile. Well, in today's comment of the day, when I clicked through the entire constituents of the FTSE 350, well, the FTSE 100 is an interesting index in that it has got some very large weightings in energy and in resources shares, but I guess the rest of the index is really very globally oriented. But I wanted to spread it out and look at the entire FTSE 350 in order to get some idea of commonality. Well, what we're seeing is that a number of the UK-listed autonomies that had been under pressure for the last year and a half are turning to positions of outperformance, and they continue to represent the kind of growth industries that were once considered really quite stodgy and old-worldish. That the rise of the global consumer really is driving demand for just about everything. Well, the rate of technological innovation that is we're seeing at present and is exemplified in just the outperformance of the technology shares, but also in biotechnology and healthcare, well, that's helping to create the kind of fundamental basis for productivity enhancement that is driving the secular bull market on Wall Street, and the just serving to ensure that the breakout from that long base will be sustained following what will inevitably be a pullback at some point. But it's also making sure that because of improving governance in much of the emerging markets, that people are being given the kinds of tools that will allow them to enhance their productivity that were really never at their disposal before. So that technological innovation is both producing productivity enhancements in the developed world, but because of its availability to the emerging markets, it's also helping to drive the development there. Well, when you have governance and technology and the central bank going in your favor, then this could potentially be a very, very large bull market indeed. Well, at some point, this liquidity-fueled environment is going to give way to the normalization of interest rates. But there's little prospect of that at present. And what we're presented with is these government bond yields that continue to go down. Well, the US 30-year Treasury was particularly firm in here today, and it's the yield on the 30-year Treasury as I speak is 2.37%. It's testing its lows. Well, that price has been really very firm and has been accelerating, but as of the close in here today, it's at a new all-time low. Well, when people see that you've got the 30-year at an all-time low in terms of its yield, then people are worried about deflation. Well, when you look at where oil prices are, that the technological innovation that we've had, so that shale oil has been able to displace a large amount of the imported oil for the U.S., that it's a source that people had really never really envisaged that they would be able to exploit. And the fall that we're seeing in oil prices, which has been driven by excess supply, but also by the fact that the Saudi Arabians want to both ensure their market share and also to reduce the prices so that they're reducing the ability of their enemies to fund themselves. Well, some people will look at that and say that it's deflationary. Well, the reality is that it's disinflationary. In other words, that these prices had gone up and now they're coming back down. It's going to be a powerful tailwind for the global economy. Well, the US as a major producer and consumer of energy, the impact of lower oil prices is going to be mixed. You can anticipate that, considering that the energy sector represented such a large number of the jobs that have been produced or generated in the last few years, that it's not going to be doing that for a while, and that we could see unemployment starting to go back up again. But on the other hand, lower energy prices put more money in people's pockets that could help to bolster employment in other parts of the economy. Well, one of the issues with having such a strong currency is that the earnings of foreign-based businesses redenominated into dollars will decline, and it means that they're going to have a challenge that for internationally oriented businesses, they're going to have to start investing in trying to grow their businesses in the US in order to balance out their currency exposure. Well, they haven't been spending a great deal of money in doing that over the last decade, and that would also be a very powerfully bullish factor. So, well, there's a lot of competing arguments out there, but we're going to rely on the chart action. That the most likely scenario is that Europe is going to outperform this year, that Asia, really that China, India, and Japan are likely to outperform the US in nominal terms, but that perhaps the currency-adjusted performance will be a bit more competitive. When you look at just how strong the US dollar is, well, when you then go and look at the performance of the S&P 500, that it has really been range-bound above the 2000 area for much of the last while. But that the chances are that it's not going to be a market that's going to go back on its own when you have just such a huge amount of liquidity hitting the market, that if some of the Fed's money was able to support Europe, that some of the ECB's money will also help to support the markets of the USA. Well, right now, the carry trade currency of choice is the euro. And we're in a very benign environment generally. And by and large, in that kind of environment, that because you have so much liquidity, that demand will return following reactions, and that, generally speaking, the best time to buy is following one of those reactions. Well, I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish a nice weekend to all of you.